a touchdown for the 49ers!
Smith in a gun with Gore on his left hip. Third down, Alex takes the snap. Alex looking.
Got it.
Post, and it's got him! Caught! Touchdown 49ers!
In 1981, Bill Walsh established a football dynasty that lasted for 20 years. The franchise lost its way for a time until a new coach brought back a winning culture.
San Francisco, he shouted, Harbaugh! Harbaugh! Harbaugh is a coach for our return!
What's your deal?
Jim Harbaugh has made the 49ers a contender again. Covering it all is the 49ers Fancast.
Greetings, 49ers fans. It's Victory Tuesday, at least by the time of this recording. And the 49ers have emerged victorious from Lambeau Field. Isn't that right, Sean?
The frozen tundra, my... Oh, wait a minute, never mind. Yeah, what a game. That was awesome.
Yeah, it wasn't frozen because the 49ers were too hot.
Oh, you've been thinking about that one all week.
It was also like, no, I just made that up right now. plus it was like 80 degrees, so that kind of helped. Anyway, welcome to the 49ers Fancast. If you're a first-time listener, what's the matter with you? If you're a long-time listener, well, of course, you're kind of used to how we do things around here, which is basically by the seat of our pants. Let's get the business out of the way. If you want to contact the podcast, you can leave a voicemail at 3477-GO-NINERS. That's 3477-GO, the number 9-ERS. I didn't even have to look at the website, Sean, to remember my voicemail. That's
not bad. Only took 3 years.
That's right. It's the first time for me. So that's I call that improvement, because like Coach Harbaugh says, you're either getting better or you're getting worse, right?
One day at a time, never. Jim. One day at a time.
That's right. You never stay the same. You can email 49ersfancast@gmail.com. Of course, you can send a Twitter message at 49ersfancast. Of course, we have a Facebook page now, facebook.com/49ersfancast. Very simple to follow as long as you can keep up. So before we get into the discussion about the wondrous victory against the Green Bay Packers, we have a voicemail to play from Mark in Maui.
Well, hi, Indiana Jim. It's Mark down in Maui. I'm sure you're planning a great week one show for us. Kind of missed you during the preseason. Looking forward to your preseason observations. During preseason, some nice things were shown. Week three was kind of scary, how the Niners got blown out. Week four, it looked amazing. I just hope that that's something that can be maintained over long haul. Kind of surprised that they stuck with Tolson as their third-string quarterback instead of Josh Johnson. From my understanding, they could have signed Tolson to the practice squad and kept Josh, but I'm sure they had their reasons to feel that Johnson added it. An extra dimension, a little bit more speed at quarterback and the ability to take the decisive step when needed to. That's something that they need a little bit more of at quarterback. Not that they lack it in Alex, but let's see, loved what we saw out of Leonard Davis. His progress seems to be on track, and the Iron Man football on the O-line will be really helpful. I think that's something that Leonard Davis can really help blow off the defensive line and give a little bit more room to run and maybe even a little bit keep the defense on their heels a little bit more. With the Iron Man football, it also may open up some running and passing lanes as well. For the regular season, based on what I see, the 49ers have four major challenges. Of course, week one's going to be one of their biggest with Green Bay, but I think the fact that it is week one favors the D more than the O, and the nod really should go to the Niners. That's probably optimistic, but hey, I'm an optimist. Let's see, for the season, I believe they can do 12-4. It sounded a little bit tentative, but yes, I believe they can do 12-4. I've heard so much talk that they're going to notch it down a little bit, maybe not even make 11-5. But I don't know, unless they've had some major injuries, and that's probably going to be the most decisive factor in it, they should be able to do 12-4 pretty well. They will need another nice performance out of the defense, and like I said, the nice changes on the offensive line should keep the other defensive teams spreading out a little bit more, forcing open lanes, not only for Gore, but freeing up some lanes for Alex to get those throws through where he had to play a little bit safe. And
oh, Mark, you got cut off. What happened? Oh, wait, there's more.
Hey, Jim, sorry, I went a little long there. I'll have to remember that for next time. Quick wrap-up. Let's see, stopped with the Alex. Randy Moss may not get all the touches that he's used to, but he's going to do something that Niners have not been able to get any emphasis on at all, which is the double and triple team. You saw that, and you may have seen that a little bit during preseason. He was getting triple teams more than once, but that ended up freeing up the receivers. So because we have Manningham and we have Crabtree seems to be picking it up, and of course we've got Vernon Davis. My gosh, we actually have something that we can talk about in terms of offense that we haven't had for a while. But that's it. Looking forward to your week one show, and always looking forward to hearing anything you produce. You have a great week. Take care. Aloha.
All right, Mark, thanks for calling the voicemail line. Mark is one of our regular listeners, so that's good. He didn't call after the game, though. Maybe he was just too stunned to leave another voicemail. Nobody else called. And, of course, now you're my co-host, so why would you call? That would be stupid. So a few points I wanted to touch on. First, the Niners picking Tolzien over Johnson. He said he was kind of surprised by that. I think we touched on that in the last episode, and basically I was kind of going with Matt Barrow's opinion that Tolzien, being the kind of the studious guy, he's the one that can kind of help Alex more in game prep than Johnson. I don't know if you had any other thoughts to add.
Well, the only other thing I would add to that is Tolzien does have practice squad eligibility and Johnson does not. But I don't believe that if Tolzien had been cut, he would have been available to sign for the practice squad because some other team would have picked him up. Or maybe not. Maybe no other team would have. But I think he showed enough. And there, you know, quarterback obviously is a hard position to come by. There's 32 yeah. teams, and there are not 32 starting quarterbacks in the league. So he would have been signed by somebody else, I believe. And I think the Harbaugh probably thought the same thing. Not that I'm in
possible.
His head or anything, but I think that's what they're looking at.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll never know, but I guess we do know that Johnson, I don't think, was picked up by anybody, was he?
I haven't heard that he was, no.
As far as I know, I mean, not like it would make major headlines anyway.
Right.
I did see Tolzien, though, at the game. Alex had come over for a timeout. He was not listed as active, but when Alex was talking to Harbaugh, he was kind of standing over the shoulder. He had the hat on and a t-shirt and the earpiece in his ear and a clip and he had a wristband. So he's like dressed in casual, but he had the wristband, the same wristband that Alex has.
Hmm.
So I thought that was interesting to see. So the other thing that he mentioned, we have basically four major challenges, and I think we addressed these in the other episode too. We talked about the four big games on the schedule, and I think that was Green Bay, Chicago, New England, and at New Orleans. Is that probably, you think that's what he was thinking?
Yeah, well, I don't know. New York Giants?
Are they on the schedule?
Yeah, they play in San Fran.
Oh, that's right, because they're in the conference and both number one in their divisions. Okay.
I mean, I would put them even over, after what happened with New Orleans this week. I don't know.
Well, yeah, but of course.
It's only one week.
He left the voicemail before the week one games happened, so
right.
He did not yet witness the, apparently it's not the Saints collapse, it's the supposed greatness of RG3, which we'll get into a little bit later.
But right.
Anyway, so challenge number one, overcome, huh? Got that out of the way. We'll talk about that more at length, obviously, as we proceed with the program. He said he likes our record at 12-4, which wouldn't make me cry. Obviously, that'd be a pretty good record. But after week one, I don't know. I mean, it's almost like, are they ever going to lose a game again? I mean, winning at Lambeau is hard to do. Winning at Lambeau is hard. And when you win basically going away, I mean, you take out that ridiculous no call on the or pulling the flag on the block in the back on the punt return, which we'll probably talk more about at length later. You know, you've got the Niners winning going away. It should have been, as Colin Cowherd said on his show Monday, he said that should have been 30-15. And I think we were all thinking the same thing. But anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
12-4, that's respectable. I could totally see that. I could see 11-5, 13-3 again. I mean, whatever. And he talked about the receivers and Moss kind of opening things up. And I guess we'll just kind of launch into our discussion, because we'll touch on all these points. So thanks again, Mark, for leaving that voicemail. Appreciate it. So first of all, your thoughts going into the game.
Well, one of the things I said in the last podcast, and I actually listened back to it to make sure I understood what I had said, was I thought we were talking about, could the Niners win this game? And I said, well, sure, if they get one or two turnovers and put Aaron Rodgers' butt on the ground 3 or 4 times, then I think they win. And they got one turnover, and they sacked him 3 times. And they forced him out of the pocket for, I think, 5 times. He was on the run. So I was kind of feeling pretty good about myself, my prediction there.
Got several knockdowns, too.
What was that?
Got several knockdowns, obviously.
Yeah, knockdowns. I guess the only surprise from my perspective on how they did that was that they did so much of it with Patrick Willis on the sideline, which we haven't seen before. But obviously they needed those quarterbacks out there to cover that. But still, it was interesting that Patrick Willis had the fewest snaps of all the starting linebackers. He was out there for 48 plays. Bowman had 59 plays, Brooks 56, and Alden Smith had 70. So that was an interesting thing to see Bowman out there more than Willis. We'll get to that later as well. So what are some of your initial thoughts going into the game?
I mean, I was nervous and I was excited, but I was kind of dreading it. You know, you look back at last year's week one and in Seattle, I mean, it was like there was no offensive production whatsoever. And without the two returns from Ted Ginn, I mean, there was almost nothing. So, I mean, that's why he got the game ball for that game. I mean, and I remembered, I guess, did they play last year Green Bay or the year before? I can't remember.
They did not play there last year.
Okay, well, whenever it was last time they went up to Green Bay, it was like, you know, they showed up, they scored a couple late touchdowns, but by that point the game was pretty much over. It was kind of like they made the score look closer than the game actually was.
Right.
And so, you know, I thought the defense could probably show up pretty good against Rodgers. I mean, we talked about what they did to Peyton Manning when they played up at Indianapolis, you know, and some of the things that the defense is capable of doing. They're capable of holding good quarterbacks down. Now, Rodgers had over 300 yards passing. He still had 2 touchdowns. But, you know, it's kind of like you're playing that bend don't break. I mean, they really, when they got the big lead, they sort of lagged off. And then you had that long series where Willis is on the bench. But basically, they didn't sub him in because the Packers had the no huddle going. So the only reason really that Bowman played that many more snaps was because that drive just kept going and going and going.
But let me ask you this. If I could have said to you before the game, Jim, the Niners will hold Aaron Rodgers to 303 yards and 2 touchdowns, would you take it?
I don't know, man. I probably would have said, that's kind of scary.
I would have taken it. I would have been like, okay, good. Because I know they're not going to run. So that's the majority of their yards.
Well, yeah, good point. Yeah, so if you hold the Packers ostensibly to 14 points, sure. Yeah, I can see where I can see where you're coming from. Plus, they got the 2-point conversion to make it 22. So yeah, I mean,
okay. And then that special teams touchdown, which they shouldn't have had in the first place. Right. if that call had been made correctly, you know, the 49ers' goal on defense is always to hold the opponent to 300 yards and under 17 points. And they basically would have achieved both goals against a very high powered, high octane offense on on the road.
Yeah, in their home place, opening day, coming off a pretty good season, you know, and with guys that have been doing it together for a long time. So, let's kind of stick. The first half was kind of where the Niners really took control of that game.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that I was watching that stupid Redskins-Saints blowout just would not end. So I didn't even – a lot of us didn't even start watching the game until close to 5 o'clock.
Oh, wow.
Eastern. it's almost been an hour, and we're sitting here waiting for the game, watching the stupid Saints and Redskins. And, it's supposed to be America's game of the week, but whatever. I show up. I finally get there, and Alex Smith has thrown – well, I was watching the stat line. It was real interesting. The 49ers and Packers traded possessions, and I remember making a tweet saying, right now the Packers lead in passing yards, -3 to -5. Because the Niners had that 3-and-out, and I guess the Packers didn't fare much better. But so by the time I'm watching the game, I bring my little 49ers Game Day Live app, available now in the App Store on iTunes. You're welcome. The stat line showed Smith 4 for 4 for 41 yards. I was like, dang, that's like 10 per attempt. That's mm-hmm. that's pretty good. So I get in there, and he immediately threw an incomplete pass to Delanie Walker. So I was like, man, I show up and this happens.
Now, was that the one where Delanie was kind of falling down and couldn't quite get his hands on it?
Yeah, he got one hand on it, and Alex kind of threw it behind him. I don't know if he expected to make a turn sooner than he did or what happened, but Delanie does that sometimes. He's not the most fleet of foot.
right.
But that's neither here nor there. So they get the field goal. And then, the Packers drive, and I don't remember if they scored for – I don't remember when the Packers scored, and I'm too lazy to pick up my phone and try to figure that out. Just don't have the time. That next drive and the 49ers start moving that ball downfield, I was like, "What? Where? Who? Wait, that's mm-hmm. a wide receiver that just caught that pass." there's another one. That's Crab. Look, it's Crabtree catching a ball. Wait, is that 80? Does it say 85? No, 82. It's Manningham. So you start seeing receivers catching passes, which was just, where did this come from?
Totally bizarre to see that in the NFL.
Right. And so they're just moving down, at this crazy clip. I mean, Alex is getting time. He's being decisive. He's making these throws. He looks like it's as easy as breathing to him. And I'm like, what happened? This is wonderful. And then, of course, now we talked about Moss, or Mark and Maui mentioned Moss, and this was the drive that went to basically set up Moss's touchdown.
Hmm.
And a lot of the national media was talking about the different formations that the 49ers used, and they had Moss in the slot, and then they motioned Delanie over to the left, and he, lines up right behind him. So the coverage guys get confused on who's supposed to cover who, mm-hmm. and you could see as soon as Moss got a step behind the two DBs that were there, I mean, he split those DBs. As soon as he had the step behind him, Alex was winding up for that throw.
Mm-hmm.
That's the exact look that they were looking for, and, of course, Moss got that touchdown, so...
And you can see in the replay on that one, I didn't notice it live, but I saw in the replay, I think it was the safety that dropped down, and you can see him motioning with, I think it was his left hand over his shoulder, as if he was trying to tell the corner or whoever mm-hmm. was back there, hey, you got the middle of the field. And both of them went to the outside, which left
right.
Moss just wide open. And Alex kind of threw that a little bit behind. I think his eyes were, I think maybe for half a second he thought, holy crap, he's wide open. And he threw it a little off, but I agree with the passing. It was so refreshing to see them using the pass. In fact, I didn't look up the stats to back this up, but it seemed to me that in the first half they passed the ball more than they ran the ball, and they did so very effectively. Of course, the Packers have a terrible pass defense. And then, of course, then they used the passing game to set up the running game, because the Colin Kaepernick run that came at the end of the first half, which set up the David Akers field goal, that was a 17-yard run, and that really jacked up the rushing stats for the first half. I think that put them around 70 yards for the first half, which means they were just around, you know, 53, 54, so that's not that much. So predominantly, they were moving the ball through the air in that first half.
Right, yeah, and they weren't and that's the thing. I mean, that's the way, honestly, Bill Walsh did it. You know, he came out attacking, used the passing game, and then you run to eat up the clock. Now, granted, he often said that the short passing game was kind of a substitute for the running game because they didn't have the guys, the size to do it. They didn't have the line that can just get up and maul people. So instead of that, they used, you know, the short passing game to control the clock. And but when you look at Alex's stats there in the first half, I mean, he was throwing at, you know, 9.5, 10-yard average, you know, clip.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they were moving it downfield aggressively. Now, the interesting thing, and I remember when Singletary was still there and Jimmy Ray was still the coordinator, and I remember telling people that, you know, they're like, oh, you got to give it to, you know, Westbrook on the outside. Let him run outside because Frank can't run outside. I'm like, Frank is perfectly fast enough to run outside. And guys were like, no, he's more of a downhill runner, blah, 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 whatever. The interesting thing was, and a lot of people mentioned this, I know they mentioned it on Mike and Mike, and Chris Carter especially. He said, you know, and this was hilarious this morning because he says, they were talking about the Packers DB that said, oh, they didn't beat us, we beat ourselves, and, you know, we have to be more disciplined and blah, 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 blah. And Chris Carter said, they came out using formations that I haven't seen since Pee Wee football. They came out with 7 offensive linemen and a tight end and just mauled you. And but the interesting thing was they lined up in these bunch jumbo formations, but they pulled guys
and
ran these runs off tackle and outside.
As Frank's touchdown run.
I'm like, what a novel idea. But they did that quite a bit. They did that with Hunter. They did that with Gore. You didn't see them get these bunch formations and just try to ram it straight down their throats every time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, they were creative with it. And, you know, it's just something we haven't had in such a long time.
Have you seen Necessary Roughness, the movie?
No.
Oh, it's an old movie. Scott Bakula and Sinbad. Anyway, Scott Bakula is a 40-year-old who gets recruited back by his college because he has 1 year of eligibility left, and they really need a quarterback, right? So 40-year-old playing quarterback. First game, handoff, right up the middle, nothing. Second play, handoff, right up the middle, nothing. Third play, coach calls the same play. He's like, coach, we can't do that. That's stupid. And now, if Hollywood knows that after 2 plays, how come Singletary couldn't figure it out after a year and a half?
Good point.
Because Hollywood, they're not exactly the most savvy people, all right? Let's be honest about it. They're in their own little world, doing their own little thing.
Maybe he'd have seen it if it was called Physical with an F.
Physical with an F. I want winners. I mean winners.
Right, yeah. No, this isn't Oakland. I'm sorry. Sorry, Raiders fans, not really. You're probably not listening to this if you're a Raiders fan because you probably haven't learned how to download a podcast yet.
Oh! They don't have MP3 downloads in prison.
No, they allow internet access.
They probably do.
They just don't have books in Oakland. Oh, burn again. Anyway, where was I? Where'd we leave off? Oh, right, bunch formations and men mauling each other. They out-physicaled the Packers, and the Packers don't, you know, they have some big guys on the defensive line, but, I mean, they just, you know, these physical teams just come in there and they just run on them, you know? And then I thought it was hilarious every time that McCarthy called a run play that went for, you know, 2 yards and, you know, no further than that. And that was, you know, Aaron Rodgers, of course, was their leading rusher, and it seemed like every time Aldon Smith got free, he was chasing Aaron Rodgers somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like every time that he lined up on the weak side, Rodgers would roll to his right and Aldon Smith is chasing him. And it's like, why isn't Aldon on the other side? You know, put him on a strong side, force him left.
Right, right. And Alden, I love the energy, but keep your helmet on. Come on. I know. Right. I know it got kicked up a little bit, but you got to have your wits about you and not take your helmet off, you know? He's a little bit of a...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, he had some issues in the off season, and I don't want to see that carried on to the field because he's so talented. And I'm sure he's a good guy. Yeah. You know, I haven't heard anything bad about him as a person, just that he's had some issues in the off season. And you know, these young athletes, when they get given all this money, they often have some issues. So hopefully he'll figure that out.
Well, you know, the issues, it's undecided whether he's really, like, the whole stabbing thing, like, he was there, but he wasn't, like, involved in the violence or whatever happened. So I don't think he's, like, a temperamental guy, but somebody said that his helmet, after the play, his helmet was already halfway off anyway.
So is very generous.
And he just, whatever. They said it was starting to come off, so he just took it the rest of the way off, which, I guess, appeared to the official as a tantrum. Unlike later in the game when Joe Staley removed his helmet walking to the sidelines, didn't look like a tantrum, of course, did not draw a flag. So, and really, I guess we should mention this, the officials were inconsistent across the board that game.
They were awful. I know you didn't see the first play. First play of the game, the 49ers kick it off, and they get called for an illegal block in the back as the kicking team.
Wow.
Yeah, so the Packers get the ball on like the 38-yard line, and they should have been on their own 15, and it was unbelievable. So, okay, we might be
I still can't get over that. A block in the back on the kicking team?
Yeah. So, I know eventually we're going to talk about this, because I think you and I disagreed on what role the officiating would play. Because I know you said last time you didn't think it would play any role at all, and as far as the games are concerned. And I think you were proved a little wrong here, because now, luckily, it didn't change the outcome of this game, but it certainly gave the potential. Can you imagine if on that final drive, Culver slips, and that ball is caught and run into the end zone, and then they get the two-point conversion, and we go into overtime, they get the ball first and score a touchdown, all because of a blown call? That, you know, because of a blown call. Here on KNBR, on the Larry Kruger show, they had Mike Pieri on to talk about the officiating. Right. And Larry says to him, so is the officiating as bad as we have been saying it was, or are we just overreacting? And Mike said, no, it's not as bad as you were saying. It's worse. And
oh gosh,
he mentioned a lot of games, but the Niners-Packers game in particular, he said, was some of the worst officiating of the day, and that the officials were extremely lucky for their own livelihood that the game didn't turn because of one of those calls.
Yeah. Well, it was interesting listening to Colin Cowherd today, because he mentioned over the week one games, the rate of, you know, coach challenges that were overturned was lower than the regular rate, I guess, and that was, I think, overall penalties called were down. Maybe that's just because refs are missing things or not seeing things. I thought that in the games that I watched, well, no, really just the 49ers and Packers game, because I didn't watch a lot of the other stuff. I did watch a lot of Denver and Pittsburgh, but I didn't see a lot of, you know, like physical stuff in the secondary.
Right.
But in the Niners and Packers game, it seemed like everybody was just kind of testing how far they could go before a flag was thrown, you know? And apparently you could get away with a lot there at the beginning.
Yeah. Well, not if you're the kicking team. You can't touch them, apparently. Mike Pieri said in the morning games, there were an average of 9 penalties per game. And in the afternoon games, there was an average of 20 penalties per game. So the inconsistency among the crews, it was, you know, obvious to anyone who was paying attention.
Right. Yeah. That's quite a disparity.
quite. I mean, and I know I'm not saying anything original here. Other people have said this, but for a league that makes $9 billion, it's like you can guarantee some pensions for a while. Okay. I mean, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, but they're part-time employees. I don't know. I'm not going to get involved in the that labor dispute because I really, you know, I really could care less because, I mean, these replacement guys can only learn, you know. It's not like they've never refereed a football game.
Well, Division II, Josh Johnson was good in Division II.
Yeah, well, there you go. But most of these guys, you know, most of these guys, a lot of them have been refereeing college games, and the NFL game is just so much faster, and there's so much more going on. And so, you know, I give them a couple weeks to work the kinks out, but by week three, I would assume that things would be moving much more swimmingly, I would hope, you know.
I'm just going to tell you the truth. My big thing is I miss Ed Hockley's biceps. I'll just tell you the truth.
Yeah.
It's something to marvel at.
I miss his uber manly voice, you know, and the football players actually look like normal people next to him.
Those guys need pads to look big. Ed Hockley doesn't.
That's right. Darn it. Anyway, enough of our Ed Hockley man crush. And where do we go next? So really good in the first half. How about Vernon Davis on that touchdown catch? I mean, did you ever think a day would come when you'd see Vernon Davis make that kind of play on a ball?
Early on in his career, no. But he's come a long way. And that's the one thing that Mike Singletary needs to get the most credit for, because he's the one who got through to Vernon Davis, according to Vernon Davis.
That's right. The one great contribution to the 49ers. Yeah, maybe. Anyway, enough about that. Jeez, Sean.
Well, let's not talk about the dunk either. We'll just pretend that didn't happen.
What dunk? That wasn't a dunk. That was a doink.
he got matumbo'd, yeah.
Well, my thing is, how about that throw? I mean, you could not have put that ball in a better place than where Alex put it. I mean, he could have thrown it at his chest. I mean, Vernon was double covered. And so he's got, over his left shoulder, he's got the, I don't know if that's Atari Bigby or whatever his name is, the safety. And then there's a corner just to his right.
Mm-hmm.
So Alex throws it low and away from the guy coming over the one side. And I mean, you know, he was pretty close to Vernon. He would have made a great play on the ball if it hadn't been as low as it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then for Vernon not only to get his hands on it, but also hang on to it as that arm hits the ground. I mean, that, you know, that ball could have come out easily. And it was just, I thought that was just one of the more phenomenal catches I've seen in a while.
Great throw, great catch. And I think it's time, and I think everyone agrees, that the Alex Smith doubt is time to put that to rest. When you have... You know, Kurt Warner picked him as one of the top best five quarterbacks in the league, and that's just based on this season, of course, so far. Rodney Harrison on the Football Night in America said that not only he outplayed Aaron Rodgers, and he did say this with a little bit of a grin on his face, but he said he was the one playing like the MVP of the league. there's a lot of that. A lot of people are giving Alex Smith respect right now. Think about it. His last three games, he's gone up against Drew Brees, Eli Manning, and Aaron Rodgers, and he should be 3-0 in those games. No interceptions, very high completion percentage. You know, took care of the ball. I mean, what else can you expect from him except just to keep doing it, and we're going to win a lot of games.
Yeah, I mean, he completed 76% of his passes.
That's ridiculous. And two of those are throwaways.
Yeah, exactly. And here's the thing. I was going to mention this. You talk about throws to wide receivers. We talked about this before. On his throws to wide receivers, he was 15 of 17.
Mm.
And the only two he missed were those two that he just air-bombed over Crabtree's head.
Mm-hmm. Which now, I assume intentional.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like the assumption, according to one of the writers, was that maybe he probably figured that Crabtree might not be able to get out of bounds. I don't know if it was that so much. I think they looked at the yardage and said, hey, if we stop right here, David Akers has a chance at a 63-yard field goal. If we go for the field goal, you know, we don't need to take any more time off the clock, obviously. I'm wondering if maybe with that lead, if they intentionally set him up to try to make that.
Hmm. I don't know.
I'm overthinking it.
I don't know about that one.
But each time Alex overthrew Crabtree, he had this smile on his face. Like he meant to do it. I don't know. It
Crabtree didn't look that happy about it, though. On that second one, he kind of had his hands out like, what's up
right.
with that?
What? Where are you going? Right. Yeah, and I know we've seen Alex airmail some balls to the sideline, but 5 feet over the guy's head.
Yeah,
I mean
that was pretty,
you know,
obvious.
It's pretty obvious he's throwing it out of bounds. Now I don't know why they didn't just take a shot at the end zone, you know, with Moss and man, you know, over there. I would have, but you know, I'm not Jim Harbaugh, so whatever. but anyway, I mean, you know, 15 targets and basically, you know, 15 completions to wide receivers. I don't know.
It's a great start. You know, it's just a
it's
start.
Improving.
They didn't show any of this in the preseason, so this is just the start. It's only going to get better as the season goes on.
Right. Now I expect probably a little more difficulty against teams with better secondaries.
Yeah.
And really, I mean, they made some great play calls. I mean, they had some great routes going that just kind of took advantage of, you know, just added to confusion for Green Bay. I mean, there was the one to Manningham where he's in the slot on the right, and he darts into the left, and then he basically runs around sort of a pick play from the other receiver and kind of runs a little loop out to the right. I mean, it's just like, I've never seen that route before.
Right.
And that, you know, that, or maybe that was Crabtree, but that went for a first down, you know. So I just thought they had a great game plan and really just were creative all throughout the game. And I think it's a testament to Alex Smith to know all of these different formations and all of these different weird little routes that they've got going on. And, you know, just looked like he was out there just playing pitch and catch sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like he knew where everyone was and where everyone was supposed to be. You know, no hesitation. But
now,
yeah,
there was one place, and I know all of his detractors are going to be all over this one play. If you remember, where Crabtree was, you know, broke wide open in the corner of the end zone.
Yes, that Moss completion inside. Yeah,
right. So, excuse me. Wow. So let me get this. You're Alex Smith. In front of you are Alex Boone, Anthony Davis, two Green Bay defenders, Randy Moss, two defenders behind him, and way back in the corner you got Michael Crabtree.
5'11" Michael Crabtree or whatever he is.
Right. Yeah. he's 6'1".
Whatever.
but yeah, I mean, you know, he didn't wave his arms until Alex was already making the throw to Randy, so it's like, you know, people are going to say, oh, gee, he missed a wide-open guy. But, you know, line of sight, fellas, line of sight.
And that touchdown to Vernon was the very next play, right? Or two plays later?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, so they got in the end zone.
Right, so it didn't hurt you. I mean, obviously you would have liked to have seen that completed and have all the Green Bay guys go, wait, what? Where was he? So, you know, and it's one of those things you look at on film, and so next time you run the play, you kind of look for that, and maybe you throw it in the back corner just in case.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, and I want to bring something up here. The two things that they really needed to improve on last year, third down conversions and in the red zone. So, better in the red zone, I think. I didn't count how many trips they had and how many of those were, well, at least a touchdown to Gore, touchdown to Davis. The Moss touchdown, was that in the red zone?
Yeah, three touchdowns and three field goals. Yeah, it was.
Okay, so there you go. That's better. Third down, only 2 for 9. So they needed to still do better on that.
Yeah, but you know what they did, though? They converted a lot of second down plays.
Yes.
And first down plays. Yes. They didn't need as many third down conversions. I mean, look, they only had 9 third downs the whole game.
Right.
So, I mean, that, you know, that tells you they're moving the ball downfield. Now, when you start talking about 2 out of 15, 2 out of 20.
Problematic. That's a lot of three and outs.
And I mean, you're on the road. So, anyway, let's close out the Green Bay game. Let's mention the we'll just kind of mention the block in the back play. They talked about initially, they looked at a block on Larry Grant where the guy kind of got into his shoulder.
Right.
But I didn't think that was the trouble play. I thought the big one was the one on Anthony Dixon.
As he was moving in for the kill. Yes.
Right. Literally just shoved him in the back. So I thought that was pretty obvious. And of course, everyone else did too.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously that, yeah, that had kind of a momentum swing. But after that was Gore's touchdown. So.
And the only thing that really annoyed...
It was the interception. Like, Bowman intercepts Rodgers, and then the very next play, Gore's in the end zone.
Yeah, that was awesome. The only thing that really annoyed me about this game from a 49ers perspective is how they started the fourth quarter. They went ultra-conservative for two series, two three and outs, with one pass and five runs. And I didn't get that because you could feel momentum shifting to Green Bay. And why in the world would you not continue to, you know, at least attempt to pick up the third down on those with a throw when you've been so successful in the past the entire game? And I was getting a little ticked off, I have to admit, because I'm like, you are not going to give this away by shutting it down and being conservative. And thankfully, they got that interception and the touchdown by Gore to bail them out of any kind of disaster. But that's the only concern I have. I want to see the 49ers in, you know, step on the throat of a bleeding opponent.
Yeah.
You know, kick them while they're down.
you know, I don't know what to make of that. You know, you take, gosh, I cannot get rid of this cough. I may have to cut that out. Well, you just consider the circumstances. I mean, they're on the road. They've already got a whatever the lead was. It was probably still
a couple scores
at that point, 23-15. I don't know. It's just one of those things, you know, the coaches took a calculated risk. Mm-hmm. And assumed that had they gotten closer, they probably would have pushed it a little more. And I kind of agree with you, you know, keep the gas pedal down until the game is over. But by the same token, you know, you don't want to take, I guess, as many risks. I mean, the more you throw the ball, the more of a risk you're taking. And obviously they didn't look at that way in the first half. But, you know, they won the game, and they won the game by 8 points, and it was not as close as that, really. So
right.
So in the end, I think they really just kind of trusted the defense and just wanted to run clock off, get out of there with a win instead of, you know, try to keep pushing it and end up, you know, getting a turnover and maybe, you know, because once you do something, one little thing can kind of turn the crowd against you and get everybody energized and just completely reverse the momentum, you know, like you take the punt return. So, you take the risk of a possible fumble or interception or something, and, you know, who knows where that can lead.
But
maybe
they have,
that was what they were thinking.
They have a quarterback that in that very game broke Steve Young's record for a few or most pass attempts without an interception in 49ers history. And they have, you know, one of the best turnover ratios in the NFL, and they just don't fumble the ball very often. So if there's any team that should feel comfortable still following the same game plan that got them the lead in the first place, which is fairly conservative game plan, they weren't throwing the ball 35 yards down the field, you'd think it'd be them.
Right. Yeah. No, you know.
But we're just we have to find something to criticize. They can't be perfect.
That's
right.
And that's the fun thing is like, oh, they only won by 8 points on the road in Green Bay. That's ridiculous. that sucks. Right. So we're finding the smallest of nits to pick, as they say. So really, I was very pleased overall with how that game went down. You know, could have been better, could have been a wider margin, but I'll take it. Win on the road is a win on the road. Anything else about that game before we move to Detroit?
Just two quick things. Attitude. I noticed that when Clay Matthews had the roughing the passer penalty, I don't know if you noticed Alex kind of jawing at him a little bit. I have no idea what he was saying, but I like the fact that he was jawing at him a little bit. And then after the game, yeah, they interviewed Patrick Willis, and he basically said, you know, we were hearing how we were going to come in here and they were going to throw all these yards and points up on us, and who do they think we are? You know, and I thought, right, oh, that was awesome. So this team has an attitude that they've earned. They're not cocky. They're confident. And you could tell that they were a little annoyed that they didn't have more respect from some people. But they certainly earned more of it after this game. So those are my closing arguments there.
My closing arguments? The defense rests.
Oh, and Joe Staley is a man. Oh, I'll say that too.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Staley did really good at first against Clay Matthews. Matthews started getting the better of him there late. But I mean, they only, you know, Alex was sacked, what, four times, I think?
Well, how can you see with all that blood in your eyes?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, he wasn't about to remove that blood. It's like, this is my blood. This is my war wound. So the Lions. We saw did Detroit play at St. Louis, or did St. Louis play in Detroit?
I just looked it up. Last week's game was in Detroit, so they were at home.
In Detroit, at home. What was the final score? Like 27-24, or?
Hold on, I'm pulling it up.
It should be
right
there. You looked it up, it should be right there.
I know, I moved away. 27-23. Stafford threw for 355. He also had three picks. And leading rusher, 62 yards. Ooh, that's scary.
Leading rusher for who, the Rams?
Yeah, Kevin Smith.
Oh, Steven Jackson? Yeah.
No, for the Lions. Yeah, leading rusher, 62 yards.
Okay, and any sacks?
Oh.
For the Rams, I mean, did the Rams sack Stafford any?
I'm looking on the stat sheet here, but I'm on the spot, so I'm going to be slow. Sacks.
That's fine.
Three. They allowed three.
Okay. So let me get this straight. You're in your house facing the vaunted St. Louis Rams.
The Lambs.
The Lambs of St. Louis. You throw three picks to the Rams. You manage 62 whopping rushing yards against the Rams in your house on opening day. Need I mention that it was the Rams?
And let me correct one stat. They allowed one sack. I was looking at all of preseason, not regular season.
Oh,
sorry. But still, everything else I said was correct. Okay. I just got that one sack thing wrong.
Okay, so the Rams only got to him once. How many times did the Lions sack Bradford, do you know?
Three times.
Three sacks of Bradford. So, I don't know. The Niners went to Detroit, obviously, and pulled it out by one. The Rams go in there. Really, the Rams should have won that game. I don't know how they let that one get away from them, but that's not the point. The point is Detroit nearly lost to the Rams at home, and now Detroit comes to San Francisco. Here's what I think. If you have the 49ers defense, start them. And here's the other thing. That's my first thing, because, I mean, I cannot wait for this game. I mean, you take any time the Niners play at Candlestick at night. I mean, they have such a good record in primetime games at home. It's ridiculous. Even this team throughout all its, you know, Nolan and Singletary years has been a better team and on primetime at home. So there's that.
Well, that's because they only got one every 2 years, so they were so excited about them.
Right, there you go. Yeah. Good point. But as I like to say, the ghosts of Candlestick like to come out to play, you know? And nighttime at there's nothing like nighttime at Candlestick. So you got Detroit coming, and anytime a dome team comes to San Francisco, it's bad news for the dome team. It's even worse for the dome team when they come in after high tide. Now, I know it's not January yet or December. You know, I know it's not as mushy as it's going to be later in the year, but it's still going to be moist. So you're going to take this dome team that relies on this kind of wide nine speedy pass rushing guys. They're going to get on that sod, and they're going to slow down the pass rush. It's also going to slow down Calvin Johnson. Now, he might get his, you know, his catches and his yards. He'll probably have a decent game, I would think. He'll probably have over 100 yards receiving. But who else do they have?
I know. Let him have Nate it. Who cares? He can't beat us. He can't beat the Niners by himself.
That's right. So, you know, like, I expect them to play a corner underneath with a safety on top at all times is kind of what I'm figuring.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they may play like a nickel base package sort of majority of the game. I don't know. You know, I don't know what they plan on doing. But I know Stafford's going to be running for his life. You know, I don't know how good the Lions' offensive line is. But, I mean, you know, again, it's at Candlestick. And here's the other thing I would say. If you have Alex Smith on your fantasy team, and let's say you don't have Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers or, you know, Drew Brees. You know, Drew Brees is still going to get yards and points, even if they do lose at home to Washington.
Right, right.
If you don't have one of those superstar guys, start Alex this week, because history has shown he's a much better quarterback at home. And when you look at ESPN's QBR rating, you know, that they have,
right.
Last season his average was like somewhere in the high 40s on the road. But at home, his QBR was well over 70s, well over in the 70s. So he's always a better quarterback at home, especially prime time. Against Detroit, whose secondary really is kind of like, eh. I mean, they're probably not even as good as Green Bay's because they don't have Charles Woodson.
Right.
They don't have Woodson and Bigby. I mean, those guys at least give you, you know, a couple Pro Bowl guys out there. Who does Detroit have? You know, can you name a single one of their secondary guys without looking it up?
No, even reading the story about the guy who didn't say Randy Moss was old and overrated.
Right.
I don't know if you saw that story. I can't even remember his name.
Right, and he's injured anyway, so he might not even play.
Oh, okay.
So
there you go.
If you've got Alex Smith on your team and your starter is like Matt Ryan or Matt Schaub, who is my other quarterback on this one particular team, I would start Alex Smith. I would expect probably, I think he's going to have, you know, 250 yards and a couple touchdowns, if not more than that. You know, it depends on how the game goes, obviously, but, you know, that's my thought on the matter. What's yours about Detroit? I mean, cause they're not going to run on you.
No.
And Stafford's only got one guy he can throw to reliably.
Yeah. Well, you know what? If the Niners can stop Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay, then they can stop Matt Stafford in Candlestick. And they haven't given me any reason to think that they're going to fall asleep and not play 110%. So
right.
Niners win this one probably by two or three touchdowns. I mean, they tighten the first quarter maybe, and then they run away with it in the second half. But I don't even see this one being close after what we saw last week and what they've proven already from last season and in the playoffs last season. So,
yeah.
I mean, Detroit's not better than Green Bay, New Orleans, or New York. Right?
Sure.
Right.
Right.
Especially, yeah, on the road. So, yeah, it's a win. We're 2-0 going into, where are they going after this? Miami? I can't remember, but they're going to be 3-0 after that.
Minnesota?
Oh, Minnesota. Yeah, yeah.
I think. But yeah, and I think we can say this because I've heard other people say this. And now I've lost it. This coaching staff, A couple of people have said probably the best in the NFL, with apologies to, you know, Belichick. There is no chance that this coaching staff will not have this team completely prepared for Detroit.
Right, right.
And, you know, Fangio is as creative with his defensive schemes as Roman is with the offensive scheme. I expect, and this is the first time in a long time that we can say that we expect the coaching staff of the 49ers to focus on the weaknesses of Detroit and take advantage of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the other coaches we've had before that, not so much. So, you know, just very, very, just very excited to see them play in this game, you know, and I don't want to like guarantee a victory because you never know what can happen, but I guarantee you that they will be the better prepared team on the field, because Mr. Super Emotional Jim Schwartz, you know, he kind of rides that emotional high sort of thing, you know, we're Detroit and we're awesome and look out for us and we got our game faces on, and that's kind of like, you know, he's kind of like Singletary in that regard. Probably a little smarter than Singletary, I would say. But, you know, the Niners will be the most prepared team on that field. And with Alex Smith kind of coming into his own, taking care of the ball, taking what the defense gives him, the way they're using the weapons they got, I just don't see how they can lose this game unless there's some, you know, major mistakes and things.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it was really exciting for me. This kind of dawned on me watching the game last week. Is I hope they can keep the coaching staff together and that they don't get offered head coaching jobs somewhere else too soon, because I really think last year we saw the birth of an emerging dynasty. You know, this is a team that
Easy.
They all start somewhere, and you look at that
Homer.
Roster. Look at that roster, baby. That thing is loaded, and they've proven that they can get players to fill in short-term gaps. They've done it 2 years in a row now, not less successfully last year on the wide receiver end, but they attract players. They've become a destination football team again that players want to go to. So they're very smart on the financials. They don't give away the store for someone that everyone else thinks they should give away the store on. I'm telling you, this is a team that they're going to be threatening Super Bowl for years to come right now if they can keep the coaching staff together. And, you know, Harbaugh really is the center of it. He can lose some of his coaching staff and still keep that going, I think. But there's a kind of magical chemistry between the three of them that is proven on the field. It's not just a feeling. You can see the results.
Yeah. I think I would like to drink your Kool-Aid, sir. But
drink it. It's hot.
I like cold Kool-Aid, not hot Kool-Aid.
You haven't had it like this. That's why. I'm telling you.
Whoa. Whoa.
I know the NFC is stacked. You know, there's a lot of good teams in the NFC, so it won't be easy, but I don't see any reason why. I think Alex Smith is only going to get better. People are saying at the beginning of the season that, you know, he's
going to regress back to form.
Yeah, he peaked last year. I'm like, why would you assume the worst? He's only going to get better.
Yeah, I mean, that's, yeah. I mean, he works too hard to not get better, and he's got the right coaching staff in place. And, you know, Colin Kaepernick, if he expects to end up being the starting quarterback of the 49ers before he's 30, might want to start thinking about poisoning Alex Smith's food. I'm just saying. I'm just saying.
You know? Poor Cap.
Yeah. Which, you know, he doesn't really, to me, have franchise quarterback written all over him.
No, I don't think so either.
He's certainly got some high points, but I just don't see it in him like a lot of guys see in. And now we begin our bonus NFL coverage. Robert Griffin III. And this is just a mini rant because I have to get this off my chest. What happened when Kevin Cobb had like three really good games one year in Philadelphia?
Young said he was the best.
Right. He became like the hottest name on the free agent quarterback market. Because look at how he plays and look at all these yards and look at all these points. And I said, Andy Reid, okay, this guy's fool's gold. He's had one season where he's had some good games, but He's had like three really big stinkers. You have to look at those too. Oh no, Kevin Cobb's great. And gosh, the Niners, oh man, I hope they sign Kevin Cobb. That guy's the real deal. He's a franchise quarterback. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Sure he is. So now all of a sudden, Robert Griffin III has one pretty good game as a rookie. I won't even say it was a great game. He had a pretty good game. You know, they ran the ball 44 times.
Hmm.
Compare that to Andrew Luck, whose running backs ran the ball 15 times.
Yeah.
Against the Bears in Chicago.
Right, yeah.
And Robert Griffin III. Now, I realize he played in New Orleans, but that fan base is a spoiled little fan base. And when their team gets behind, did you notice how quiet that dome was? I don't know if you did.
I did not watch that game, so I can't comment too much on it. I did hear on the radio that something like 7 of the first 10 pass plays were actually thrown at or behind the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
So it's not like he was actually...
Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, he made some nice throws, and he made some really good plays, really instinctive plays, smart plays. But, you know, all of a sudden we got guys starting talking about, you know, rookie of the year and franchise quarterback, and he's going to be great. He's better than Michael Vick. And I'm like, guys, it's week one. What is with all the superlatives? Like, he's like the greatest thing ever. This is the greatest thing we've ever seen. You know, we've never seen a guy this athletic who can throw the ball so accurately and make great instinctive decisions. And Steve Young, anybody? Fran Tarkenton, anybody? Mm-hmm. We've seen this guy before.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And already people are readying his shrine in Canton. And I'm like, really? Already? You know,
hey man, remember last year Rex Grossman had like three or four really good games in a row,
right?
For that team,
so,
you know.
Yeah, it was a clear sign that Rex had finally emerged. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good. Ask Tim Tebow how quarterbacks from Florida do.
that was below the belt.
I went there. how do quarterbacks brought into the brought up by Urban Meyer, how do they fare in the NFL?
Well, one's doing pretty good right now.
Wait a minute. Well, yeah. So what does that say about Alex Smith? I mean, is he just that much better than Tebow and Grossman? Huh?
Yeah, Tebow is not a quarterback. He's not. Okay, I throw the ball better than Tebow does.
You probably do. And farther, maybe.
Well, maybe not farther, but I throw it with more velocity than he does.
I assume you kind of throw it like a girl.
Oh, okay.
So did you see Tim Kawakami, his piece about Alex Smith after week one?
No, but I don't follow him. He's probably the only beat writer I don't follow.
Oh, really? Because he really does write good pieces. I liked him. I don't think he's that bad. I don't think he's, you know, Lowell Cohn. Whew, that guy. Wow.
So what did he say?
Don't get me started. Oh, I don't know. I don't read him anymore. I refuse.
No. Tim on Alex Smith.
Oh, well, I was actually just kind of biding time while I wait for my phone to reload the freaking page.
Oh.
That I've had on here for all day, waiting for this moment.
This podcast has gone long again, by the way.
Right. That I've kept, well, a lot of that is, you know, 20 minutes of silence while I went to get my cord. And
it was only 2 minutes. It's only 2 minutes.
My TV. Whatever.
Okay, it was longer than two, but.
Dudes, I don't need your stupid Netflix ad. Take me to my article. This is what I love right at the beginning, first few paragraphs. This wasn't the new Alex Smith on display here Sunday. This was the old one. This was the University of Utah Alex Smith, the quarterback in total control, relaxed, ready, brainy, and dangerous. This wasn't the quarterback Mike Nolan broke, Mike Singletary discarded, and Jim Harbaugh had to revive with tender care last year. No, on Sunday, Smith was beyond all that. and back to what he used to be, fully able to integrate mind and body into the flow of a very tricky contest. This is an Alex Smith who can win big games, huge games, almost every game. But it just felt good to read that.
Yeah, I guess I'll have to add him to my tweet deck 49er column.
Yeah, maybe. Let's see. It was just coincidence that Smith had perhaps the sharpest game of his 49ers career against Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers. And blah, 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 blah. He revisits it just a little bit. But Sunday, Rodgers was the second best QB on the field. It was Smith, not Rodgers, who threw a snap touchdown pass to Moss in the first half and spoke about how happy he was for Moss produce so quickly. Yada, yada, yada. It was Smith, not Rodgers, who completed 20 of 26 attempts for 211 yards, two TDs, and no interceptions. Rodgers had more completions and more yards, but also threw an interception. And most important, it was Smith who won. And then he mentions the bet where Rodgers has to wear Alex's jersey.
Right.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, Rodgers had more yards and everything, but he also had like 18 more attempts. So,
right.
Sorry, go ahead.
Let's see other lines I like. Of course, there were many other reasons the 49ers won this game. They played tremendous nickel and dime defense for most of it and got production from just about every member of their offensive unit, but the man who made it all seem natural was the quarterback. And he's the one who seemed so shaky in that role until recently. Quote, he had to be great in understanding what the Packers were doing, what we needed to do to counter that, Harbaugh said. Notably mentions Kaepernick's 17-yard run and the 63-yard field goal. Smith knows Kaepernick can come in from time to time throughout the season, and he understands. Quote, check your ego, you know, Smith said. That's another sign this isn't a new Alex Smith. It's the old, unthreatened one. He's thinking through the game plan right along with Harbaugh and coordinator Greg Roman, and he sees the logic in using Kaepernick, too. Last year, the team and QB were a reclamation project. Now, already, after just 1 week of the 2012 season, the 49ers and Alex Smith are comfortably in the NFL elite.
Like I said, birth of a dynasty.
Easy, Tiger. let's not get crazy now. Let's not get crazy, Philadelphia fans.
No.
Okay.
No. The difference.
Let's not go wild.
The difference is don't have anything to back it up, Philadelphia fans. All right.
That's true. Let's not go wild, Cowboys fans.
All right. I want everyone to come to the show notes page and let me know what you think of that Maya whole dynasty, birth of a dynasty comment. I want to hear it. Agree or disagree.
That's right.
Except for Jamie.
If you'd like to give feedback regarding what Sean just said, you can go to 49ersfancast.com, leave a comment on the blog post for this episode. You can also do that dialing the voicemail line 3477-GO-NINERS. That's 3477-GO, the number 9-ERS. You can tweet at 49ersfancast. You can also tweet at Sean Farrell, but I don't know that he'll reply to you because you're scum. No, just kidding.
That is actually a private account that is kind of locked off.
Yeah, so I didn't tell you how to spell it. Spelled S-H-A-W-N-F-A-R-E-L-L-Q. And that's, yeah. So, anyway, right, so follow at 49ers Fancast for all your 49ers Twitter needs. Let's see. What email 49ersfancast@gmail.com. And those are all the ways you can contact us. If you like, you can follow on Facebook, of course, facebook.com/49ersfancast. And last but not least, if you visit 49ersfancast.com, please click on that affiliate banner link for the 49ers team store. When you remember that 49ers fan in your life, also remember 49ersfancast.com. Sean, any last words?
Go Niners. Stomp Detroit.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
Really? That's all you got? Go Niners.
That's all I got. I've said everything. I have said everything. I've been talking for an hour.
Have we?
What else? Okay, hold on. No, I'm going to look at my notes.
1 hour,
I have 2 pages
11
notes.
Minutes. Oh, it's now 1 hour and 12 minutes.
Okay. No, I said that. oh, okay. Here's okay. One. I like the fact that Jim Harbaugh still does Who's Got It Better Than Us at the end of the game. There you go.
No.
And they all respond to it like they still
buddy.
Care.
Yes, that is.
I gave you something. There you go.
I guess we should end the show with that every week now. Just playing Jim Harbaugh doing that. So
yeah, you should. Good idea.
Yep.
Yeah,
so anyway, for Sean Farrell and the 49ers Fancast, I am Indiana Jim saying farewell and go Niners, stomp Detroit.
You're such a jerk.
See, don't you think that sounds better coming from me? That's maybe not.
That's what she said.
Oh. That's going on the end as a blooper. Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, that's... And stopping the recording in 3, 2, 1.